It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Some Appalachians today grew up conflicted about who they could or could not be.
When I was in high school in the mid-70s, all the LGBT literature I ran across was about big cities. So I thought, how can you be Appalachian and like countryside and be gay?
That story is next. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. West Virginia author Jeff Mann says it's taken him decades to figure out how to juggle his identity as both a proud Appalachian and a gay man. For much of his life, the two have felt mutually exclusive. But now, Mann and a group of LGBTQ poets and authors from across the region are working to make sure young queer Appalachians don't feel like they have to choose between who they are and the place they call home. 100 Days in Appalachia's Anna Patrick reports.
Growing up in southern West Virginia in the 1960s and 70s, Jeff Mann first came to terms with his sexual identity in the pages of Patricia Neal Warren's The Front Runner. His favorite teacher, who confided to him that she was a lesbian, lent him the love story about a running coach and his star athlete.
That's how I learned that I was gay. I read a novel.
His teenage revelation was a hard one to cope with for the native of the small town of Hinton, West Virginia. Mann feared he'd be shunned from his community if he revealed himself. Books and stories, however, offered a safe, inviting refuge for him. But the books he found were set in places that Mann couldn't identify with.
When I was in high school in the mid-70s, all the LGBT literature I ran across was about big cities. So I thought, how can you be Appalachian and like countryside and be gay?
More than 40 years later, Mann has helped to publish a new book that, through poetry and prose, tackles that very question.
So this book certainly makes clear to anybody who picks it up that those two identities are not mutually exclusive.
Mann is the co-editor of LGBTQ Fiction and Poetry from Appalachia, published this month by WVU Press. The anthology is believed to be the first of its kind, the first to celebrate the work of accomplished LGBTQ Appalachian writers.
And as I say in the introduction, at this point in American history, things are looking bleak for all kinds of minorities because of the current power structures. To be able to put this book out now, I think it's good timing.
Mann and his co-editor, Julia Watts, wanted the collection to include works from the most important voices of Appalachia's LGBTQ writing community. So instead of holding an open call for submissions, Mann and Watts solicited through invitation writers that had already published at least one body of work. The collection features nationally known voices such as Dorothy Allison, Ann Pancake, and Fenton Johnson, as well as emerging voices like Jonathan Corcoran, a native of Elkins, West Virginia.
I no longer live in Appalachia or West Virginia, and I am constantly bombarded by what people think this place is. I try to use my life as an example to show that we are not a monolith. We are not a single place.
Corcoran now lives and works in New York City and says this book will also be a counterbalance to the narrative that consistently plays out in national media and popular culture about the region, and will hopefully help continue to break down stereotypes.
People have an idea of what Appalachia is, and I think a book like this blows that idea open. It explodes that idea and shows that this is a diverse region full of people living complex lives, lives they might not have expected.
In the book's introduction, its editors write that, quote, writers who define themselves as both queer and Appalachian often find that juxtaposition of identities difficult, confusing, and conflicted, end quote. For Jeff Mann, he says it took decades to figure out.
Now, I got it down now, but I'm turning 60 in August. The people in this book obviously have chosen not to cut off one identity and focus on another. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the book. And Rita Riddle, who was a scholar and a poet at Radford, she said the same thing. It's not either or. It's and.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Anna Patrick.
West Virginians will soon be allowed to give more money to political groups in the state. Political donors will be allowed to give $2,800 to candidate committees, $5,000 to political action committees, and $10,000 to state party executive committees. All of those limits had been set at $1,000. The changes are a result of Senate Bill 622, a measure that passed the legislature and was signed into law last month by Governor Jim Justice. But the bill wasn't without controversy. Discussions at the Capitol showed the measure was highly partisan, with Republicans in support and Democrats opposed. Dave Mistich spoke with Dan Wiener of New York University's Brennan Center for Justice about how Senate Bill 622 will affect politics here. We drop into that conversation with Wiener explaining how West Virginia's new campaign finance limits compare to other states in the country.
Some states, for instance, Montana has far lower limits, you know, in the hundreds of dollars rather than the thousands of dollars. Many states set limits at sort of more comparable to where West Virginia's limits were before. It's fair to say, though, those limits are still lower than the limits in some other states. In New York State, for instance, the limits are quite a bit higher. So it definitely moves West Virginia sort of up the scale in terms of contribution limits, although perhaps not, you know, completely outside the norm. You know, you have to look at it in context, too, of a state that does not have a super major media market. Oftentimes when we increase contribution limits, it's to justify because of the increased cost of campaigns. West Virginia is one of those states still where retail politics is very important and where even a relatively modest amount of money can have a pretty big impact. So the fact that the limits are higher in relative terms is pretty significant, and they're pretty high for a state like West Virginia.
I want to take a moment really quickly to listen to Delegate Moore Capito. He's a Republican from Kanawha County.
What we're allowing with this bill, what I can see, is more transparency on where the money goes. The individuals that are contributing have the opportunity to give more money directly to the cause that they are behind. So perhaps, and again, call me a glass half full guy, but what you might see instances of, you might see an individual giving more money to a candidate as opposed to giving less money to the actual candidate and more money to some independent expenditure.
Before I get to my question, I also want to take a moment to let you hear from Delegate Andrew Robinson. He's a Democrat in West Virginia's House of Delegates.
If you have undisclosed or dark money in these races, they can put out whatever information they want, whether it be true, whether it be accurate, and they can put it out there without knowing who's behind it. In true transparency, who put that money out there and who put that message out is very important to what the message is and if I believe or if I agree with it. And we should be able to know those things if they're going to get involved and get people elected or unelected in West Virginia.
I guess if you would sort of react to what they're each saying here, but also couch that in the Citizens United decision, which, of course, is a very landmark decision on campaign finance law here in the United States.
Just to start for your listeners, you know, Citizens United was the Supreme Court decision in 2010 that permitted corporations and unions to spend unlimited amounts of money. And corporations, we mean broadly to include nonprofits, political organizations, and the like. And they can also raise unlimited amounts of money. And that was obviously a very major decision. Now, what Delegate Robinson is saying is absolutely true. Citizens United created a huge problem with unaccountable secret spending in both state and federal elections. That's ironic, in fact, because the Supreme Court and Citizens United embraced disclosure. And in fact, you know, by an 8-1 vote, the justices said disclosure, transparency rules are absolutely constitutional. And in fact, if you have disclosure, particularly in the internet age, there's really no need to limit how much people can spend in elections because it's just going to be disclosed. And that's going to be accountable to the voters. And so it's a common sense thing. If you are going to allow more money in elections, you should at least make sure it's all transparent. So that is something that the legislature absolutely had the constitutional authority to do, but as I understand it, did not do. As to the assertion that, you know, if you raise direct contribution limits, you will get fewer people giving to independent expenditure groups and more people giving directly to candidates. And obviously, you know, the contributions directly to candidates, those were not covered by Citizens United. They can still be limited. They're also disclosed. But the idea that the one kind of cancels out the other is really not documented in existing research. What we tend to see when you raise contribution limits is that wealthy donors just give more to both. They give more directly to candidates, and they also keep giving more. They keep giving to independent expenditure groups. So a lot of people will just do both. Because frankly, after Citizens United, you can give, you know, $50,000, $100,000, $1 million to an outside spending group. The fact that you're now being able to give a bit more to candidates is not really going to change your willingness to give to that outside spending group. But it does mean that, you know, candidates are going to be spending even more time raising money from kind of a rarefied group of people who can afford to write a $2,000 check.
And so one more question for you, and it's sort of based on the two different perspectives that we heard from those two lawmakers. This issue was rather partisan as it made its way through the legislative process here. Republicans were in support of this measure, and Democrats tried to amend the bill, not only to stop the increase to the contribution limits, but also add reporting requirements for donors to independent expenditures. All of these attempts, you know, to amend that bill by the Democrats, all of those failed. I'm curious, though, is legislation like this partisan in nature across this country? Are we seeing Republicans push for this in a certain way and Democrats push in an opposite direction?
Well, you know, it's really weird. I would say that amongst, let's call them the political elite, it is very partisan. Republican politicians increasingly tend to be opposed to campaign finance rules, and Democratic politicians tend to support them. It is not that way among voters. Every single poll that has been done on these issues shows overwhelming bipartisan support, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Conservatives, for robust disclosure of campaign contributions and, in fact, pretty strong limits on money in politics. President Trump, before he became president and before he became kind of the establishment figure in the Republican Party, was very critical of the Citizens United decision and spoke out quite frequently about our campaign finance system. In fact, you know, the whole line, "the system is rigged," that he used, that was originally something that he was talking about money in politics. And you see rhetoric like that, amongst sort of insurgent Democrats like Bernie Sanders. So it is politically polarized in the sense that kind of mainstream Democrats and Republicans seem to have lined up on opposite sides of these issues. It's not politically polarized in the sense that ordinary Americans pretty much all agree that we should have strong disclosure and also strong limits. And in that sense, you know, is why I think both the Citizens United decision and the sort of political elites who are standing in the way of this, are really not on the right side of the American people. And I will say also in other states and in other parts, there are plenty of Republicans who do support campaign finance rules. And there are Democrats from time to time who don't support them. And there are also many Democrats, it is fair to say, who proclaim their support for campaign finance restrictions and strong safeguards, but then don't follow through. So the picture is a little bit more complicated than the rhetoric would sort of suggest. But by and large, unfortunately, the elite does seem to have divided some on this.
Right. Well, Dan Wiener of the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University School of Law. Thanks so much, Dan, for speaking with me.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
For more information on West Virginia's new campaign finance law, visit wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.